Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avantcard. With personalised pricing, our rates are made for you.
Parenting on Moncrief. Thanks to Five Rivers Fostering, providing 24-hour support for foster parents and children. FiveRiversFostering.ie.
1894-53-106 is our low call number. Our text number is 53106. That'll cost you 30 cents. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter or send us an email to afternoon@newstalk.com. It is time for our parenting slot. Joanna Fortune joins us once again. Joanna, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Here's your first question. I'm a primary school teacher, as is my partner. We both consider ourselves liberal and rebellious, accepting and championing diversity in our personal and professional life. In the last 6 months, our four-year-old daughter has been telling us she does not like brown skin. The first time we didn't know what to say. Then she brought it up again. We chatted about it. We did a little bit of research. At this stage, she's been bringing it up almost every week now. We talk it through. Tell her that people have different coloured skins, hair, eyes, etc. And it doesn't matter. She's very curious and will ask why some people have this skin or that skin. Her play school teacher is actually brown and only speaks about her classmates that are of a darker colour skin. However, she tends to prefer to play with her white classmates. It really shocks and upsets us. I feel I know how to deal with it in school, but with my own daughter, I can't explain it or rationalise it. We don't want to ignore it, and we don't know what to say or to do or how to help her, as the conversations we've had are not working. We have researched ideas and are making sure we have diverse books featuring all children of colour, shapes, abilities. Help. Any advice appreciated on how to deal with this?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's there and it is that icky, uncomfortable thing that as parents, we, you know, a lot of parents of small children have had to face, you know, when you're standing in a queue waiting to pay somewhere and your small child proclaims loudly, why is that person this colour or why is that person in a wheelchair or this size or that? And they make statements and it tends to be our embarrassment. But the question from the child is coming from a genuine place of curiosity.
Yeah.
You know, children are smart, they are inquisitive, but they are certainly not blind to race. We might like to think they are, but they're not. Because like any of us, they notice difference. That's what they're picking up on. I would never say that a four-year-old is racist. A four-year-old is articulating out loud differences they're noticing and not understanding and seeking to understand. So I think, you know, they also learn quickly, by the way, that certain comments and questions get very strong reactions from mum and dad.
Yeah.
And they will do that again and again and again to see, oh, look at that, it still gets that response. But basically from the age of 3 years old onwards, children actually do begin to categorize people. And that's not just race, but you'll hear it in their play. You know, this is a goodie and this is a baddie. And they begin to separate and differentiate from that age onwards. So that's when we notice things and commentary coming in about shapes, sizes, abilities, race, all of those things. So, you know, the tendency in young children as well, and I'm interested in this piece about school and she plays with her white classmates, that the tendency for all children is to seek out others who are most like them. That's very normal and natural for them to do. That's not that she has some kind of white supremacy tendencies. That's, I want to play with kids who are like me. And she's working something out. They pay attention, don't forget as well, to who is around them. Now, I'm noticing in this letter, this child is, it sounds like, in a multicultural environment between her teacher and her classmates. But they're also observing who their parents spend time with. And that's going to be something that's going to heavily influence them. I think that it is tempting to say things like, oh, we're all just the same, and try and dismiss the comment and leave it at that. But if it keeps coming up as it is in this situation, my suggestion is try to go a little deeper. Instead of just dismissing, saying, no, 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 we're all just the same, maybe say, I mean, if your daughter's saying, I don't like brown skin, or I don't want to play with someone with brown skin, that you say something like, that's not a very good reason to not like somebody. And then you leave the door open for your child to go deeper and say, well, he or she pulls my hair or pushes me over. And then you might get to the point is, this kid is actually playing roughly with me and I don't like to play with them. And you can then reframe back, this isn't about their skin. This is about you don't like to play with this child. But I think you've got to keep the line of communication open. You want to have a nice, neat line that you can default to when it comes up, especially if it's coming up in public when you might be a little embarrassed yourself. And I do support what this parent is doing. You've researched ideas, you have diverse books. It might also be a good idea to get in diversity toys, you know, like the little small world toys that kids play with and have talk to each other. You can get all kinds of different ethnicities, different abilities, different shapes and sizes, and have those around to play with. Another little experiment that can be nice, and as a primary school teacher, you might already have done this, you say you've dealt with such issues in school, is you can do a little baking exercise. Don't flag this as I'm now going to teach you about race, but you could do a baking exercise and simply have a mixture of different coloured eggs, like brown eggs, white eggs, and as you crack them, just notice that what's on the inside is the exact same, and they all go in to make the same cake. And you know, children respond to very practical things like that. So keep it simple, keep it consistent, but don't overstress this and don't turn it into something it's not. Don't decide your child is racist. Your child is expressing a curiosity, is noticing differences, and is seeking out kids like her. She just needs a little encouragement and positive reframing around it.
Yeah, but because I suppose the question of why do people have different colour skin is a completely reasonable question.
Absolutely. It's just not easy to answer.
Yeah.
And that's often what makes the question more difficult, is not the question, but actually formulating an age-appropriate
development. It's a complicated,
exactly. Yeah, and then you get yourself down a rabbit hole of, oh my goodness, all of this.
Stuff, yeah.
So I would say you're on the right track and simply keep doing it, but don't overanalyze this.
Yeah. Yeah, or yeah, because I suppose if she sees mummy and daddy getting freaked out by
completely.
This, it'll be,
absolutely.
My daughter is 13 now, and recently she said she'd like to end up her life. She said she's bored in school. She's not impressed working until she's 65 years of age. She's good in school and didn't seem like she was depressed. Should I seek professional advice?
I mean, there's so little for me to work with here, so I'm going to respond quite generally. If, like, I always take statements about ending one's life in anybody, but particularly adolescents, very, very serious. So my short answer to this is, should you seek professional advice? Absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
I wouldn't wait. I would follow through that. Then I want to go back a bit and kind of break down a little bit of what's in this. There isn't much here. But I think what we often see is that with adolescents in this increasingly glossy Insta life, you know, everything life through a lens and on social media, real life can really fall short and disappointing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it can seem like it's dull, it's unappealing. And if I can't have this life, I'm not, you know, going to be getting the bus, the 46A or whatever it is every single day till I'm 65. No, thanks. Why would I want that? And again, I'm not seeking to minimize or dismiss, but I think if you could take the opportunity to go, well, look, if you're going to work till 65, wouldn't it be more interesting to find a job you really love so it doesn't feel like a chore? What is it you really love? And the reason I'm coming at it that way is because when you move into adolescence, you really have gone through this process of just quite recently having discarded childhood hobbies, possessions, things that make you feel like a child in order to become an adolescent. But on that cusp, you may not yet have developed new likes, new hobbies, new possessions that are of your developmental stage. So it can be this middle ground. And in that middle ground, where there isn't a fully developed desire, we can get an apathy. And apathy is that kind of chronic sense of disinterest, lack of enthusiasm. And in adolescence, that can be broken down into different types of apathy. So you could have like a defensive apathy, sure, who cares anyway, that kind of thing and statements. In this instance, we're looking at something that's like a boredom apathy. Now, short-term boredom, I've said it on this show before, is actually a good thing because it enables young people to find things they like to do. It allows them downtime to process. However, long-term boredom in adolescence can be a painful experience, and it can be a way of expressing an underlying loneliness. And that is something that, if unchecked and unprocessed, can lead or certainly be linked to impulsive thoughts, impulsive actions. And that's where my concern comes in, you know, that I would want this to be looked at. I mean, as a parent, of course, you want to help her tap into her desire so that she can meaningfully engage with herself and who she's becoming and who she wishes to become in the future. But right now, I'm going to say, I would say that maybe engage professional services and take her to see a qualified certified adolescent psychotherapist.
Yeah. Is there a kind of a, do you suspect a more generalized problem that there might be a generation of teens with unrealistic expectations about what their life's going to be like?
I absolutely think that that can be an issue. It's just not going to manifest as overtly or as significantly in every teen in the same way.
Yeah.
So it's why I'm slow to kind of say, look, at this as teens in general. But there is an element of this kind of simmering apathy. And it's even why in mental health discourse now we're looking at different apathy isn't just apathy. Is it a defensive apathy? Is it a boredom apathy? Is it a, you know, we're breaking things down, going, well, what is it that this is telling us? And how difficult it is to develop a desire in adolescence when you are, you know, competing with a world of social media. And again, I don't want to be sounding like, oh, and the problem is social media.
Yeah.
You know, there are lots of pro-social gains with social media, but this is unfortunately one of the quite significant cons. The fact, though, that she's explicitly stating, you know, I'm not bothered. I just want to end my life. I want to act on that. I want to follow up on that and take that seriously.
My six-year-old daughter doesn't understand boundaries and screams and cries if she can't do something or if she can't have everything she wants when she's at home. Therefore, I allow her to express herself. I know she behaves like this at other people's homes, but I don't want her to have to behave in a different manner elsewhere. It's like moulding her and quenching her spirit. The big problem is I'm often unwell, so I have to ask family members to mind her, but I still don't want them to tell me how to raise her. They want to control her, to tell her what's right and what's wrong, how to play, but I don't think that's necessary. She'll work it out herself eventually. What should I do?
Okay, there's so much in here, but I'm going to take a tough love approach. So whoever wrote this, just, you know, brace yourself.
Yeah.
Look, at first of all, boundaries and limit setting are not the same as controlling a child. So you need to get that out of your head. Far from it. Children actually thrive and develop healthily when they have calm, clear, consistent, predictable boundaries and limit setting. It lets them know that they are safe. It lets them know that there is somebody bigger, stronger, wiser and kind who will take care of them, who will make sure situations don't get out of control. And more than that, who will make sure that they don't get out of control.
Yeah.
So it serves as a emotionally regulating way of parenting a child. And so it's not just nice or a good thing, it's essential.
Yes.
And typically we see children go through or begin to go through this at the age of 12 to 24 months old. In my field, we'd call that secure attachment cycle too. But basically it's where your child is hitting you with all their wants. I want stuff. I want it. And I want it now.
I don't think that ends at 24 months.
That's what I'm like. So they begin at
24,
it's 12 to 24. But it's all about I want.
Yeah.
And it's up to us to say, well, no.
Yeah.
So the children learn it is okay for them to want things, but it's not up to them if they always get it. So when you say your family members want to control her, do they, or do they simply want to put boundaries and limits in place? They want to tell her what's right and what's wrong. What's wrong with that? Children need that from their grown-ups.
Yeah.
When you say they want to tell her how to play, I want to pull you up on this and say, if they're saying she has to play safely, that's perfectly fine. Mm. Otherwise, you're right. Children don't need to be told how to play, but they do need to know about playing safely and respectfully with others. So when you say she'll work it out herself eventually, you know what? She just won't. How can she? Children learn through repetition. They learn from guidance of safe, trusted adults in charge. So there's so much here that I'm just not buying, if I'm honest. I can't, like, I'm all for children expressing themselves through play, developing a sense of self and an inner working model and self-esteem. But this isn't how you do it. Boundaries and limits are how you do it. So when you say you don't want her to have to behave in a different manner elsewhere, that's also just not realistic. We all behave differently in different settings.
Yes.
It's socially.
That's an important thing to learn.
Absolutely. It's part of general civility. It's how you interact with others. It's vital. And then just, you know, you're often unwell. I just want to, you know, of course, come at that empathically, because that has to be stressful on both parent and child. If you're often unwell, then there is an element of stress. But also, I'm aware that you have to ask family members to mind her. So you are very fortunate that you are surrounded by a family system that are there to support you and your daughter, are there to help you. And I think you've got to look at that as a strength and as a resilience factor and draw on that, but trust it. They're there with you and your daughter's best interests at heart. So I think that you can come at this in a more collaborative way, and don't feel like just because somebody else is doing it, that it negates what you're doing.
Yeah. Plus, it just strikes me that a six-year-old, she screams and cries if she can't do something or if she can't have everything she wants. That doesn't sound like a very happy little girl then.
No, it also, it's that, I mean, if you were saying a two-year-old is doing that, I'd say quite normal. Because when they want something and you say no, their response is to accept, let's be honest, unlikely.
Yeah.
But more test and defy your limit by shouting and give it to me and I'm upset and I can't regulate this. And then we come in and we say, I know you're upset, but it's not okay to do this. Here's what we can do instead.
Mm.
And that's the kind of approach.
We have to take a break after that. An eight-year-old still sucking his thumb.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. With personalised pricing, our rates are made for you.
53106 is our text number that will cost you 30 cents, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Joanna Fortune is still with us for our parenting slot. We did have a question at the start of the slot about a little girl. She's six, but she said to her parents she doesn't like brown skin. One texter says they are worried that the child is racist. She's not. She's inquisitive. Embrace that and see it as an opportunity to educate her. Someone else says, is it me or are the parents overreacting slightly? The child doesn't know what she's even saying or asking. Well, no. And I think they're trying their best not to do that. It seemed to be implicit in what they were saying, though, even though they were probably slightly horrified by it. Joe says, I was at a match in Talca Park about 15 years ago. The only black player on the field was Mark Rutherford for Shelbourne. During a break in the play, a man beside me asked his young son who he thought the best player was. The little chap answered, the fella in the red boots, which Mark was wearing. I love that.
Yeah.
And someone else says that the best way to deal with kids and racism is to do the blue eye, brown eye exercise devised by psychologist Jane Elliott. Kids are told not to speak to anyone who has brown eyes and only to speak to those with blue eyes for an entire day. This teaches them about inclusion and exclusion.
Well, it does. Once you do the processing part afterwards, that's effective in a group setting. And once you have them do that, then you have to sit them in a group and process. How did that make the blue-eyed people feel, the brown-eyed people feel? How might you feel? You have to do a process reflective functioning piece for that to be effective.
Yeah.
And really, in terms of development, you're looking at kids who are kind of 8, 9 upwards for that
older
one. Yeah, just to put that out there. Yeah.
My 8-year-old has been sucking her thumb since she was a baby. We've recently visited an orthodontist, and even if she stops now, she'll still need braces. I've promised her a trip to Disneyland Paris if she stops by her 9th birthday in May. She still sucks her thumb. Any tips on how to get her to quit? We have a 4-year-old too who also sucks her thumb and just want to be done with it before it's too late for her and too expensive for us.
Yeah, I don't know if the expense part is the trip to Disneyland or the orthodontics, but that's a pretty big incentive.
That's a pretty big incentive.
And I'm immediately curious going, are you already taking a family trip to Disneyland Paris? Because you've just put it on the line here for everybody based on the thumb sucking, or else, no, that's too big.
Yeah.
I mean, I really think you're setting yourself up to fail with that. So look, 8 years old, yes. Look, dental issues typically arise around thumb sucking around 5 years and over. So I would say, yeah, you're right. The orthodontist, right to act on it. But I'm curious, did the orthodontist speak directly to your child? Because at 8, your child could certainly take that conversation. And often children will take that from a stranger, you know, a third party, rather than mum or dad saying, don't suck your thumb. If the orthodontist says it, suddenly it takes on a gravitas that they could just dismiss. Oh, yeah, you're just telling me what to do.
Mm.
So I just think as well, going back to Disneyland, A, the incentive is way too big. And also the lead in is too big. I mean, we're in November now and her birthday is in May. So that's shorter term goals would be what I'd look at, because that's interminable. Like, there's no incentive for her to begin to do that until April.
Yeah,
why would
absolutely
she do it now?
Yeah.
So I would say, first of all, rule out any underlying anxiety, as always. Like, if the thumb sucking is a sensory regulatory reassurance because she's stressed or anxious, then of course deal with that. There's a lovely little children's book for children slightly younger than 8, but I'm noting you've a thumb sucking 4-year-old as well, though your 8-year-old might enjoy this. It's by Michael Dahl and it's called Thumbs Up Brown Bear. And it's about Brown Bear has to give up sucking his thumb, and it's because of his dental stuff and all of that as well. So it's all in there, and it's a nice little book, and children often respond really well to, you know, problem solving. What could Brown Bear do, and what would they advise him to do, rather than thinking of themselves? So it can be a nice way to come at it. In general, with anything like thumb sucking or dodies or anything like that, I would look at, track a pattern. Is there a key time of the day that she is doing it more than others?
Yeah.
Tired,
yeah.
You know, cranky, unwell, things like that. Offer a substitute, maybe rubbing a soft teddy or a little piece of, you know, velvet or silk material. A transitional object like that could be a really nice way of moving away from thumb sucking, but still getting that sensory reassurance. Use a distraction so that you're not constantly giving out and saying, don't do this and don't do that. So when you see it happening, simply redirect her into something that requires both her hands. I need your help with doing something that keeps her hands and fingers and thumbs occupied. Gently and firmly remind her, you know, say, I see you're sucking your thumb. Maybe you forgot we're not doing that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And just keep that line.
From a child's point of view, though, it always struck me it's kind of like smoking or something, that it's kind of mildly, that's a terrible analogy, I know, but it does seem to be kind of, it is comforting, as you say,
absolutely,
and a bit addictive for them.
Compulsive.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, you need to be patient with this, because it's not easy to give this up, particularly if I'm 8 years old and this has been a part of my routine and my self-regulatory exercises. This has always been there, that my thumb sucking makes me feel better. Why would I give it up? That'd be the question. So I think you've got to talk about it. Why is it bad? Look, there are lots of videos out there, you know, with lots of kind of creative ways of looking at why it's bad. But I think there's nothing better than simply sitting down and having a conversation, that this is going to make your teeth go a funny shape. This is going to affect how you pronounce your words. We want you to grow up and to go through it that way. But if the orthodontist didn't have a decent, now not just a one-off sentence, but a decent chat with your daughter about this, I think it would be worth going back there and setting that up.
Also, it strikes me peer pressure might be a factor
here.
Most 8-year olds don't suck their thumb.
Actually,
how can she go on sleepovers and stuff?
We find that children tend to give it up by the age of 4.5 themselves, generally speaking. And it tends to be because of peer pressure. They don't want to be perceived as babyish. Now, I know that's not nice, and we don't want other kids calling kids babies, but it can be the more effective way, that as soon as they perceive others are going to think of me this way, I will stop it. And like anything, it's easier if your child elects to stop this herself.
Yes, of course.
But if this situation, it hasn't happened and you must put this in place, sit down and talk it through.
Yeah. If they're going to Disneyland next May, they've probably booked it already anyway.
I'm thinking that was nothing to do with thumb sucking, and now you've made a connection that's going to be really difficult to follow through on.
Yeah, and if the 4-year-old, though, hasn't given it up by next summer, then they go, well, I want to go to the moon.
Yeah, I'd pull back and do something much smaller, like if you can get through this week, if you can get through today without thumb sucking, you get 10 extra minutes before bedtime. If you can do it for a week, we get to do a fun activity together at the weekend, maybe baking or drawing a picture or doing clay or whatever you want to do, go for a walk and collect nature-y things. You know, that you keep it on, start with a day, start with 2 to 3 days, build up to a week, and do it that way. But next May is massively optimistic.
It's amazing what prompts a lot of response. A lot of people are texting in about thumb sucking. Brian says, I sucked my thumb until I was around 10 years of age. I did end up needing braces, but the thing that eventually worked for me was sleeping with gloves on.
Right.
I always sucked my thumb to help me sleep. One night and the habit was broken. Nothing else worked until then. Try it. Hope it works. The mother of the thumb sucker says they haven't booked Disneyland yet.
Don't book Disneyland yet.
That's,
and if
a fortune,
you are
anyway,
you know, make it about the fact that you're going anyway.
Yeah, and the it's also, I don't know what the one in Paris is like, but I've been in the one in Florida and it's just surreal. It's like when you go in the lifts, like the lift announcement says, it's the third floor. And it's just really weird. You're right. She hasn't stopped sucking. Disneyland isn't working and it is too far away. She has spoken to the dentist directly. Made no difference.
Okay.
Says the mom.
I'd set small term goals. Really, like, honestly, get through one day. And then once you've done a day, build up to two, build up to three, and be very, very patient with this. Gentle yet firm.
Yeah. As someone else says, my wife is 48. I know her since she was 19. She still sucks her thumb and has a blankie. A lot of adults do that.
We all need comfort.
Yeah, CP says my 14-year-old boy still sucks his thumb and the orthodontist says he's perfectly fine and doesn't need braces.
He's lucky.
My 12-year-old who never sucked her thumb is already in braces. Well, that's true. That can be, you know.
Correlation, yeah. Causation.
Helen says, I still suck my thumb at 42. I do it in my sleep. No matter how much I try to give it up, my brain simply won't let me. And that's the case with many adults. Bribery works no matter what the age. Well, it seems like it doesn't.
I don't think it does.
And Kate says, Disney, I was offered chocolate or a video rental on Saturday evening. Offered a holiday and I'd have grown another limb. I'd have been that excited. Right, okay. Joanna, thanks for coming into us. Joanna Fortune there. We're going to take a break after that. The truth about killer robots.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. With personalised pricing, our rates are made for you.